Saturday, May 9th. Early in the morning, Linda Bird had her picture made with Ed Weisel Jr. and two young men for the Young Democrats for Lyndon movement. And then she departed wearily but with relief for Washington with Bess, and I went on with Liz to the World's Fair heliport. We went to the top of the heliport to watch Lyndon land. He came in about 11:10 with that aura of excitement and energy surrounding him, and we went to Singer Bowl. That, delightfully enough, is the exhibit of the Singer Sewing Machine Company at the World's Fair, where Lyndon was addressing the Amalgamated Clothing Workers at the request of Jacob Potofsky, their celebration of their 50th anniversary. He urged the union members to join his anti-poverty crusade and announced the government's plan to provide $1 million as a starter to help the people of Harlem fight juvenile delinquency. And then he called on them like a preacher in a brush arbor, "Are you with me? Will you join me?" And got a big response. Not exactly as a surprise to me. I had to get up and say a few words to them, which I managed well enough because I feel fairly much at home with Mr. Potofsky and his constituents. From there, we went to the Venezuela exhibit. And to our amazement, I saw a gentleman with large, dark glasses on, President Betancourt. Lyndon was supposed to cut the ribbon at the exhibit. President Betancourt's presence was a great surprise. Thank goodness Angie Biddleduke was handy, made his way quickly to us, so that together we could pay the proper respect to President Betancourt's presence. Lyndon asked him to come down to Washington on Monday when he was going to have the members of the OAS for a conference. We had a swift on roller skates tour of the Venezuela exhibit and then went on to the Federal Pavilion where Lyndon held a press conference. Impromptu, unexpected, I wonder how our staff and our security put it together. Then I said goodbye to Lyndon and went with Angie Biddleduke, Norman K. Winston, and the Spanish ambassador to the Spanish Pavilion, where we had lunch. Or at least, the first course of what would probably have been a wonderful lunch. Some hors d'oeuvres, and then a delicious, very exotic soup, wine poured to everybody. But since the whole World's Fair was looking at me through the big glass windows, I turned my wine glass down and avidly drank my water. And then just as we finished the soup, they said we had to leave. There was no more time. I said goodbye to Angie's two charming children, the children of Lulu, whom I had known. We made a swift trip through the Goya exhibit, portraits of some Spanish royalty, a nude. Thank goodness I didn't have my picture made in front of that. There was also Velázquez, El Greco, and the most impressive picture of all, and the one which I, if I were a PR representative, would have had my picture made in front of, was of a loaf of bread and some other simple article of food sitting on a table, and it was called the Marshall Plan, by a Spanish impressionist whose name we all know, but whom I can't remember right now. Then we went quickly out to Mitchell Field, Long Island, for the dedication of a John F. Kennedy Educational, Civic, and Cultural Center. The scene was oddly rural, so close to New York City. It was a football field with bleachers around it. There were some 8 or 10 high school bands lined up playing. Mimi Benzel, who had sung for us when we had had an official dinner for some visiting African chief of state, sang the Star Spangled Banner. Lyndon made a speech and unveiled a plaque in dedication of the John F. Kennedy Educational, Civic, and Cultural Center. They've already turned over some of the buildings inherited from Mitchell Field military installation into a small college, and they plan to build, in addition, a center for plays, symphony, and ballet. Naturally, in the course of it, Lyndon called on me, and it was a fairly easy occasion, because this did look like the sort of thing that President Kennedy would have liked most, bringing the arts of this nation to the people. It was one of his goals, and one to which Lyndon and I can give vigorous support. There were children up in trees, high school girls in pseudo-Western costumes. a sort of bucolic look of suburbia, but only a few minutes from New York City. From there, we went to Atlantic City, where we were met by Governor and Mrs. Hughes, and I rode in the car with Mrs. Hughes to the Claridge Hotel to dress for the Jefferson Jackson Day dinner. It was going to be in Convention Hall. This is my first real view of Atlantic City, and a rather depressing one it was. A down-at-heels resort town, probably luxurious, 30 or so years ago. I shiver to think of whoever has charge of assigning the rooms for the Democratic Convention this summer. And as for us, if we are there, where we'll be is still a difficult problem. Before the dinner, we went to the usual reception for the head table guests and a few special people, and then on in to the great convention hall, where there was the largest assemblage of ticket-paying Democrats that's ever been gathered together in New Jersey, so they said. For the dinner, at which Senator Harrison Williams, Pete Williams, was the handsome toastmaster, and Charles Engelhard, chairman of the convention and of the host committee, made the remarks. I sat next to Mrs. Hughes, and she, mother of some 9 or 10 children, and a very positive-minded lady, was a good seat companion in her own right. We saw Jane Engelhard down in front of us, with the table at which were the Duke and Duchess of Windsor, and next to her, Pearl Mester, who will probably have a house here in Atlantic City during the summer, and a table full of her guests, and a few people that I rather suspected were Republicans, which is cause for cheers. In listening to Governor Hughes during the evening, I got the feeling that he was a pretty solid, tough, practical politician. I liked him. He knew when to say no, when no was the real answer. No's not always easy to say to Lyndon. I was proud enough of Lyndon's speech, that was not one of the ones that I loved the hilt as I do some. He had sort of offered me up for a 1 minute thanks for being there. And it's harder to say no to him than it is to do something I don't really believe is a good idea to do. So I told them that, of course, I understand this is not the ideal time of the year to visit Atlantic City, but I do hope you will invite me to come back this summer. Maybe I'll even bring my husband with me. When the dinner was over, we filed out, shaking hands with as many people as we could possibly reach on the way out, and then went by what was supposed to be very briefly the Shelburne Hotel for a reception hosted by the Engelhards, a penthouse with a lovely view of the city that is probably the most plush spot in the town now, which only points up the fact that this is going to be a difficult city in which to have the Democratic National Convention and have everybody be in a good humor about their room, because although it's comfortable and attractive, it is old-fashioned and not sleek and bright. Among the guests were the Duke and Duchess of Windsor, and had a few minutes' delightful conversation with either one of them, the most ridiculous part of which was when I was trying to find somebody to show me the way to the ladies' room, and the Duchess of Windsor suddenly emerged and said, can't I take you? It's right down here. I have a suite right down at the end of the hall. Just follow me. I never expected to be shown the way to the ladies' room by the Duchess of Windsor. They're an attractive but rather sad pair. I feel that they're making a life out of what one ought to make 2 hours of the day, that is, one's rest and recreation. Life ought to consist of a terrific commitment and an awful lot of hard work to some job that you like, and then a little off time just to celebrate and have fun. During the evening, I found myself sitting by someone named Ian MacPherson, a very attractive Scotchman living in the Union of South Africa. It rather pleases me that I can describe somebody as an attractive man. He attempted to explain to me the difficulties of that riven country, of how many more college graduates they have turned out among the Negro race than have some of the other countries recently released from colonization. Sitting out on a deck looking at the lights of Atlantic City, while Lyndon talked to a very attractive lady of the rather velvety society set, Minutes passed so that it was close to midnight when we left by helicopter and then by plane for Washington, getting to the White House at a little after 1 o'clock and late to bed from a very full day.